Okay, and thanking you is proper introduction. That's the theme of the day, being thankful. And there's no better way to acknowledge Thanksgiving and to incorporate its message than by pondering the themes of gratitude and by considering what this whole notion of Hakaras HaTov, of being grateful, means to us as Jews. And perhaps there's no mitzvah that brings that point home more than the mitzvah of Kibbud Av V'Em. And on this day, when family is venerated and is held up to such a degree, and perhaps especially this day this year, when getting together with family has become complicated and fraught, perhaps no better time to ponder a mitzvah that brings home this message of Hakaras HaTov and the obligation of Kibbud Av V'Em is one that is central, literally, to our religion, because we find that if we look at the Ten Commandments, which, as many Rishonim understood, serves as a summary for the values of the Torah, and are 10 points that are highlighted to make a point about what the Torah is telling us, so we find that Kibbud Av V'Em is placed in an interesting way, because there's a notion which is not just a cute idea, but the Rishonim take this idea seriously, that it seems that the Ten Commandments are divided. The two tablets are significantly two tablets. Each one has its own message. And that the last five are about how we treat each other, are about mitzvos ben adam l'chavero. And the first five, it would seem, are about how we relate to God, about mitzvos ben adam l'makom. And yet, the fifth one, which is technically on the first tablet, is somewhat surprising, because that commandment telling us to respect our parents, that would seem to be an interpersonal mitzvah. That would seem to be something that we do in our relationship with people. So why is that on the first tablet? Why is that a part of the first five commandments? And this is something that the Rishonim struggled with. And they try to understand how exactly should we relate to the mitzvah of Kibbud Av V'Em. Involves human beings, so should we call it an interpersonal mitzvah? Or is it really somewhat of a mitzvah ben adam l'makom? Is it something that we do as part of our relationship with God? And it seems that it's somewhat of a hybrid. It seems that it's a combination of the two, and it's perhaps really a bridge between the two. So there were comments among the Rishonim that took it as essentially a mitzvah towards God, that it's a way of showing our appreciation for God, despite the fact that we are remote and that we are human and that we don't actually feel like we can relate to God and interact with him the same way we relate to other human beings. So some of the Rishonim, such as the Ramban and Rabbeinu Bachi and a few others, understood that the message of Kibbud Av V'Em is that we want to honor God. And because it's difficult for us to do that in a way that we can perceive, we honor his partners. And the Talmud tells us that there are three partners in the creation of the individual, the creation of humanity: the Father, the Mother, and God. And therefore, the way we relate to our parents says something about how we relate to God. And these are the human beings who we can convey the message to more directly. And therefore, ultimately, it's a form of respect to God. I saw a parable in a certain sefer. It was very evocative. It discussed, imagine you have a certain wealthy, generous individual. You have a Baal Tzedakah, somebody who's looking to help the community. So he decides to set up a restaurant, which is going to be a free restaurant. It's going to provide food for all who need it at no cost. And he's running this restaurant, and he's doing it anonymously. No one knows that he's the one who's the patron. No one knows that he's the sponsor. And he's operating this restaurant through other people. He's having people run it. And it's operating for a few months. And he's wondering, I want to know if people appreciate it. Do people actually have some gratitude for what I'm doing here? But the problem is, he's anonymous, so no one's going to come up and thank him. He's not going to have any way to gauge whether people are actually grateful. So then he comes up with this idea. I'll put hidden cameras in the restaurant, and I'll watch how the people who come in, how do they treat the waiters? If they're grateful in the way they interact with the waiters, and they show that they're appreciative, and they show that they're happy, so then I'll know that they are indeed Makir Tov. I'll know that they have this gratitude, and I don't have to have it directed at me personally. It's okay. I'll remain anonymous, but I'll watch how they interact with my partners in this endeavor, and if I see they're grateful, that will mean something, and that there are those who suggest that that's the message of this mitzvah, that the parents are the human partners, and if the children treat the parents with respect and with gratitude, so that's a message that reflects back on God. And perhaps in that sense, it's a mitzvah ben adam l'makom. It's something that we are doing as part of our relationship to God. While other Rishonim take a stance that seems to put it more in the interpersonal realm and see it as a mitzvah ben adam l'chaveiro, see it as something that we do as part of our relationship with others, and they put it under the heading of Thanksgiving, under the heading of hakaras hatov, of proper gratitude towards other human beings, recognizing that we owe at least our existence, and usually so much more, to our parents. And therefore, this is the obligation of our lifetimes, to be able to express that gratitude and that acknowledgement through our behavior, through the mentality that we express, through the actions that we do. That's our way of showing the people who brought us into this world and continue to raise us. That's the way we display that, through our attitude of honor and respect. So if that's the case, it sounds a little bit more like it is a mitzvah ben adam l'chaveiro, that it's a interpersonal obligation. And this is a question some of the great achronim discussed. It's prominently associated with the Menachas Chinuch, who in his discussion of this mitzvah raised this question, should we see it as a mitzvah ben adam l'makom or a mitzvah ben adam l'chaveiro? Is this about us and God, or is it about us and others? And the truth is, it probably doesn't matter so much as a practical question. In terms of how it actually affects what we do, it probably doesn't make that much of a difference. So, for example, how could it affect things? So we have a concept called mechila, which means at least two different things, and they're both possibly relevant here. Mechila sometimes comes into play if I hurt someone, if I do something wrong to someone else. So we know I'm required to ask for mechila, which we would translate as forgiveness in that context. That Yom Kippur is not going to bring me atonement unless I ask for mechila from the one who I hurt. So that the Mishnah tells us that if I do a transgression against God, so then I go through the normal process of repentance, of tshuva, Yom Kippur, and all year round. But if I hurt a human being, so then I have to obtain their forgiveness first. So theoretically, how you classify something as a mitzvah ben adam l'makom or mitzvah ben adam l'chaveiro, so it has an impact in that area, in Hilchus Tshuva, but it's not really going to affect things here, because if you see this, you see a deficiency in honoring one's parents as a interpersonal mitzvah, so then for sure it's not going to be fixed without asking for forgiveness. For sure there's going to be an obligation to ask for forgiveness from the parents. But even if you see the commandment as directed towards God, but still tshuva is going to require rectifying it. And how are you going to fix it? You're going to fix it by apologizing to your parents and by working it out. So either way, the process is going to be the same. The process is going to require that interpersonal kind of appeasement and apology in order to rectify it. So whether you call it between man and God or between other people doesn't really affect that question practically so much. Mechila is also used in a different context. It means something else, where it means a person is mochel, he's willing to suspend, to waive his rights. So I have an obligation to you, I owe you money, and you're mochel, it means I don't have to pay you. So mechila plays a role in kibud av aim also, because the Talmud tells us that a parent has the right to not insist on any detail that the Talmud gives about how kibud av v'aim requires us to behave. So the parent has the right to be mochel. The parent has the right to say, it's okay, I don't need you to do that. Av shemochel al kvodo kvodo mochel, that if a parent says, it's okay, I don't need that, so they have the right to say that, and that's effective. So that could seem to indicate that it's interpersonal, because it's up to the other individual to decide whether they insist on it or not. But even that doesn't really shift, because if you say it's interpersonal, so then yes, the recipient can say it's okay, I don't need it. But if you say that it's between man and God, it would still be the same rule, because still the mitzvah would be that God tells us to respect our parents, and our parents have the right to define what they consider important and not important as far as that respect is concerned. So the fact that the parent has that kind of control, has that autonomy to decide whether they want any specific action or not, that still would reflect the same idea either way. Either it's because they are the recipients, the mitzvah is directed at them, or because that's how God defines the mitzvah, and even as far as he's concerned, that's sufficient for his purposes. So whether we call it interpersonal or whether we call it a mitzvah between us and God probably doesn't radically affect the practical halacha. And the placement of this mitzvah as the bridge between the two luchos, as the mitzvah that connects our relationship to God and our relationship to people, makes a lot of sense. But even if it doesn't affect us in terms of practical steps, it affects us tremendously in terms of how we think and how we relate to our parents and how we relate to the world as a whole and how we relate, in fact, to our very existence. Because the idea that it's interpersonal and that kibud av v'aim is about hakaras hatov, is about gratitude. So that's an idea that you find in many sources, but you find it in different ways. And there's a nuanced difference. And to focus on that difference is very instructive and very helpful to us. So what do I mean by two different ways? So some of the Rishonim who invoke this idea, it's in the Sefer Achinuch and in the Ralbag and in the Radbaz, some of the Rishonim who invoke this idea of Hakaras HaTov, they present it as an attribute, as a midah, that part of our character is that we need to be grateful, we need to have this recognition, and the most obvious recipients of that gratitude are those who brought us into the world, those who gave us life. So that's where gratitude should logically start. And if this is such a fundamental attribute, so then it has to express itself at least in that context. And the way the Sefer Charedim, for example, expresses it, that you might think that this isn't necessarily an obligation, that the fact that your parents brought you into the world and took care of you to whatever degree they did, so perhaps that's just human nature. So, okay, so people want to have families and they want to take care of them once they're there. It doesn't reflect any kind of great commitment. It doesn't reflect any kind of great kindness. That's just human nature. Perhaps somebody might think that. And the Chai Adam talks about this at great length as well. He says that's completely the wrong attitude. And if one thinks like that, and one thinks that, okay, I don't have to have gratitude because this isn't on out of a decision just to be kind to me. It's just the way people live their lives. So then we believe that God's teva, so to speak, kaviyachal, whatever that means, is to benefit as well, is lehitiv, is to do good. And that's why he created the world. And therefore, if we think, okay, we don't have to be grateful to our parents, so then we don't have to be grateful to God either. That mentality is clearly one step away. And the whole ability to recognize anything good in the world is going to be wrapped up in this. So therefore, as a basic attitude of appreciation towards everything that we have from anywhere, this mitzvah is crucial. So some who invoke Hakara Satov, who invoke gratitude as the foundation for this mitzvah, see it in that framework, that it's a midah, that it's an attribute, how we relate to the whole world, and our parents are the primary example. While others phrase it in a different way. So in some of the sources, and this is perhaps based on a statement in the Talmud Yerushalmi and the Maseches Kiddushin, it sounds like it's the phrase in Hebrew is piron chov, that you're paying back a debt. That here, your parents brought you life, and they took care of you to whatever extent they did. And therefore, it's only appropriate that there is reciprocity, that you should reciprocate and take care of them in a parallel way. And that's perhaps the foundation for the mitzvah, according to these commentaries. And that also, as we'll see, could perhaps explain many of the halachos. So what we find here is Hakaras HaTov expressed in two different ways, two different emphases within gratitude. One is indeed the interpersonal idea of a debt, that if somebody has benefited me, I should benefit them. If somebody has provided service for me, I should provide service in kind. And the other is part of a larger mentality and an attribute of gratitude and of appreciation and recognition of what we have in any area of life. And Kibbud Av Ve'Em is the first address and perhaps the most prominent address for that attitude to express itself. So this could explain certain positions that we find in halacha. There was a major debate among the Rishonim as to what the mitzvah of Kibbud Av Ve'Em requires. The Talmud gives us a few examples. So, Gemara Maseches Kiddushin and the Midrashim, the Talmud Yerushalmi, tell us that Ezehu Kavod, what does Kavod mean? It means that you provide acts of service. You bring food, you bring drinks, you bring clothing. You bring whatever the parent needs. You help them get up and sit down and walk around. You provide acts of assistance and acts of service. And the Gemara lists many different things in this category. The commentaries point out that clearly it's not exhaustive, that there are many other things we could think of, but that anything that is in the category of service is certainly included in Kibbud Av Ve'Em. And then there are a few other statements the Talmud has, that Kibbud Av Ve'Em expresses itself also not necessarily in direct relationship to the parent. The parent isn't necessarily even always present, but the way one talks to other people and the actions that one does, that represents also giving honor to a parent. That applies even after the parent is no longer alive, and things that are done in order to honor the memory of a parent. So those are clear expressions of Kibbud Av Ve'Em. So we have at least those two categories, that anything that is done in the service of a parent to directly help them is included in the mitzvah of Kibbud Av Ve'Em, and anything that brings honor and glory to a parent is also included in Kibbud Av Ve'Em. But the Rishonim struggled with the following question. What if a parent asks you to do something and it's not in their service? It's not bring me my coffee, bring me my slippers, help me with this, help me with that. What if it's not in their personal service? They're just telling you, I think you should do such and such. And they may not even be present. I think you should wear a red sweater tomorrow. And they're not even going to be there to see if you're wearing the red sweater. So if there is a commandment from a parent to do something that's not in their personal service, is there an obligation to follow that instruction? Does Kibbud Av Ve'Em ask you to do that. So this was a discussion among the Rishonim. And the Rishonim raised this question specifically in light of what happens if there's a conflict between a parental command and the halacha. So if a parent says, do such and such, and the halacha says otherwise, so what should you do? So the Talmud tells us essentially that actual halachic obligations, whether they're Torah obligations or rabbinic obligations, so those are still obligatory. And even if a parent says something that contradicts the halacha, we still have to keep the Torah as far as the actual mitzvos are concerned. And the Rishonim, in the context that they say, well, yeah, because that's not even kibud av ve'em in the first place. Because kibud av ve'em is when a person asks for something for their service. If a parent says, I need my coffee, I need my slippers, okay, so that's a commandment that's kibud av ve'em. But if they just issue an instruction, it doesn't seem like kibud av ve'em should require that. So many Rishonim took that position. But there was one view in the Rishonim that wasn't so sure. And the Vilna Gaon quotes this view in his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, as do many of the later Svarim as well. And this view maintains that it's true that listening to an instruction that's not about service is not the core mitzvah of kibud av ve'em. Yes, it's true. That's not the main mitzvah. The main mitzvah is acts of service and actions and statements that bring honor and glory to the parent. That's the main fulfillment of kibud av ve'em. But to follow an instruction is also something, is also a value. It's not the core mitzvah, but when it's possible, it's also something that has some merit to it. So the later commentaries try to figure out, what does that mean? It is or it isn't? What do you mean? It's good, it's bad, it's not the real obligation. So how do you understand that? How do you understand this formulation that primarily kibud av ve'em is acts of service, but listening to an instruction in a more general way is still nice, it's still a good idea, even if it's not the main obligation? How do you understand that? So many of the later commentaries struggled, from a Lumdish perspective, struggled to try to find how could you interpret that particular position. And I think it could be explained based on these two nuances that we see within Hakaras HaTov. That Hakaras HaTov actually has at least these two levels. That on the one hand, it's about reciprocity. It's about treating others with assistance when they have treated us with assistance, and with benevolence when they have treated us with benevolence. So our parents brought us into the world and raised us and provided us with food and clothing and support. So we should also provide our parents with similar parallel services, and also give them what to eat and give them what to drink and help them function in the world. All of that is basic reciprocity. So yes, that is an interpersonal obligation that, at a minimum, kibud av ve'em does require that. For sure, the major obligation is going to take on that form. But beyond that, Hakaras HaTov is also a mindset, is also a awareness that we have received benefit, and that that should picture how we think about things and how we see those who have benefited us, how we see our parents, and how we see the world as a whole. So therefore, that mindset is very sensitive and is affected by everything that we do. And we can nourish that mindset, and we can also undermine that mindset. And whatever we can do to nourish it, we're better off. And whatever detracts from it is something we try to avoid. So if a parent gives an instruction and it doesn't directly affect them, it doesn't directly affect their service, so it might be like these Rishonim said, like the Vilna Gaon quoted, that's not the core mitzvah of kibud av ve'em. and there might be other competing considerations. But if it's possible, it's still valuable that whatever is going to reinforce within ourselves this appreciation and this hakara, that's still something that if we can hold on to those opportunities, we're better off for it. So in contrast, if a parent asks you to do something and it's not about them, so there might be reasons, we'll discuss in a minute what some of them may be, there might be reasons why it's not practical to follow that instruction. But if the mindset is, I'm not going to do that because you're not the boss of me, you can't tell me what to do, so that mindset detracts and undermines the gratitude that we need to feel, and that itself is damaging. And in fact, some of the Achronim, the Chazanish and others, thought that was actually a violation. If that's the attitude, if that's the way it's expressed, that that's a separate mitzvah. We have an obligation of not only kavod, but of mora aveim, of reverence for the parents. And if that's the way we would think or even express, then for sure that would be a deficiency in mora and reverence. If one's mindset is, I don't have to do this because you're not the boss of me, so that's going to take away from the mindset in a very crucial way. So what emerges is that we have a few levels to this obligation, that we have the basic mitzvah, which requires this kind of reciprocity, this kind of service. But beyond that, when it's possible to maintain the gratitude through extra gestures and through extra responsiveness, so that is certainly something of value and not something to be dismissed when there aren't overwhelming reasons in the other direction. Now, sometimes the reasons are overwhelming. So there is a tshuva of the Maharik, one of the Rishonim, who discussed a question that comes up all too often and has major practical implications. And we'll say more about it in a minute. But the Maharik is quoted by the Rama and quoted by all of the later commentaries and the halachic authorities, discusses the question of whether a parent can order a child who to marry or who not to marry. And the Maharik assumes that no, the parent cannot command the child marry this one or don't marry that one, assuming there aren't other major factors involved. And he brought three reasons for this. And the three reasons he brought, not exactly in this order, but the three reasons he brought were, first of all, we said before, that the parents cannot command the child not to do a mitzvah, and getting married is a mitzvah. So therefore, the parents cannot command the child regarding that. Now, you might say, well, the parents aren't necessarily saying don't get married. They're saying marry that one and not this one. So the Maharik conveys here an interesting point in this whole side discussion that apparently a part of the mitzvah to get married is connected very strongly to being interested in that person specifically. And if there's a conflict between who the individual wants to marry and who the parents want this individual to marry, again, assuming that there aren't other major halachic issues, so then that goes to the fulfillment of that mitzvah, and that has tremendous impact in that area. So that was one of his reasons. A second reason he brought is that the Talmud says that even though the obligation of kibbut av aim requires the child to provide food, to provide clothing for the parent, but that is in the sense of service. It's not in the sense of paying for the food or paying for the clothing. And if it's a question whose credit card gets used to pay for the food or to pay for the clothing, so the Talmud has a discussion about this, but the conclusion is that it comes from the parent's credit card, that the expenses go to the parent. It's the act of service of bringing over the food, going shopping, bringing the clothing, bringing it in a physical sense that goes to the child, but the expenses go to the parent. So that has been extrapolated into a broader question of how, who bears the cost of various things. And the way the Maharik expresses it, you know, there's no greater expense to a child than being deprived of the ability to marry the person they choose to marry. And therefore, for a parent to say, you can't marry this one, you have to marry that one. So that is coming out of the account of the child to such a high degree that if we don't expect them to use their credit card for the food or for the clothes, so all the more so you can't expect them to make their whole decision of who to marry based on that. But the third element that Maharik invokes here is along the lines of this discussion in the Rishonim that we mentioned, that the idea of kibud av v'em is really centered around service to the parents, but it doesn't allow them to necessarily tell the child the details of their own personal life. So therefore, it shouldn't extend to who to marry. So those are the three principles the Maharik invokes in this discussion. But it's important to know and to appreciate that no one should walk away from this brief presentation and think, okay, now I know what to do in this very complex area of life, because each one has variables and is probably also significant that the Maharik brings three reasons and the commentaries analyze, do you need all three? What if any one of the variables is changed, as is very likely to be possible? Each one of those variables in a given situation could become more complicated. And as a matter of practicality, when there is a conflict in this area, which happens very often, so wisdom would not dictate either for the parent or for the child to say, okay, I got the Maharik, that's the end of the discussion. I got the Rama, that's the end of the discussion. And the other one said, well, I got the Chazon Ish, who said in this situation is different, and that's the end of the discussion. That wisdom would not dictate that anyone point to any one source and think that that covers the whole story. This is a highly complex area of life that requires appreciating all of the various moving parts. But what emerges is that, yes, it's true, we live lives of many competing priorities and of much complexity, but a recognition, at least when possible, of the debt that we have to parents who raised us. That's why the post can point out that we have a debt as well to adoptive parents and to step parents who play a productive role in raising us, and that it's also a part of this whole mentality of Hakaras HaTov. So that has to express itself also, and it can't always dominate. If there are overwhelming considerations as far as our major aspects of how we make our life decisions, so it's not always possible to allow that to be the only priority, but it's somewhere on the table, it's somewhere a part of the discussion. And this impacts other major areas, one that's probably similar in scope, the question to make Aliyah or not, the question overall of where to live, which is also a very complex mix of how do I live my life and how do I make my spiritual decisions, and how does that at the same time interact with what a parent may want and what a parent may insist on. So there are very serious factors here that deserve to be considered. But at the same time, to hold on to an awareness that the parents' desires are not nothing, are not simply irrelevant, but they contribute to an awareness of what Hakaras HaTov means, and to be properly imbued with that sense of gratitude, and that every decision that we make that reinforces that helps us, and everything that undermines that hurts us, that's something to always hold on to. So what also could come out from this observation, there is a discussion in Poskim that, okay, if the parent says you have to contradict Torah law, so you have to follow the Torah law anyway, respectfully, but that's ultimately going to be the obligation. And this would extend not only to Torah law, but to rabbinic law as well. But what if there is a action which somebody wants to do, which is not a Torah obligation, it's not a rabbinical obligation either, but it contributes to their spirituality. It's something that they want to do for reasons of religious growth, and the parent is opposed. So the poskim have a whole discussion about that, all back and forth. What about that? In that area, if a parent insists on something and it's not going to contradict actual Torah rabbinic law, but it does contradict the spiritual strivings of the child, so how is that viewed in light of the obligations of kibud av v'em? So here again, there are many different considerations, and many of them are important. But what should perhaps play a big role that we don't necessarily always acknowledge in the conversation is that, yes, it's true, whatever activity I want to do right now may contribute to my spiritual growth. I may feel like this will make me more of an accomplished religious individual, and all of that may be true. But considering the parents' wishes, all the poskim agree is still a fulfillment of Kibud Av Ve'Em. It's not necessarily an obligation of Kibud Av Ve'Em. It's not necessarily the only path. But to acknowledge a parental request is always, everyone would agree, is a fulfillment, is a realization of Kibud Av Ve'Em, even if it's not the only choice that we have. So it's worth always considering, okay, path A will give me certain spiritual advantages, but path B will help me to fulfill one of the Ten Commandments, one of the ten central messages of Judaism, as the Rishonim understand the Ten Commandments to be representing. So that's a tremendous value as well. So that should be taken very seriously, even if it's not the only consideration, but just the recognition that that also will further enhance my sense of gratitude and further protect any erosion of that crucial sense. That's something to take very seriously, even if that's not the only consideration. And you know, I was asked to speak this morning, so I was thinking the two major themes that come to mind to speak about today, this time, Thanksgiving, and this time of the year, were Kibud Av Ve'Em or Chanukah. So I struggled for a minute which to pick. So just to mention one point in Hilchos Chanukah that connects the two. So the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch talks about when the ideal time for lighting Chanukah candles is. And in the times of the Talmud, when they lit outside, there was much more of a narrow window as to when to ideally light. Nowadays, we light inside, so it's much wider, the time period that we have to light. But nonetheless, the Ramah says that it's good, it's ideal, if you can, to still light at the time discussed in the Talmud at the beginning of the night, just as it starts to get dark. A little bit of a range of what that means, but sometime at the early part of the night is the ideal time to light Hanukkah candles. That's Tov. That's a good thing to do. So some discuss, as a tshuva of Rav Nosson Gestetner, was a great posek of Bnei Brak, who passed away a few years ago. So sometimes it happens that the family wants to light Hanukkah candles, and the grandmother wants to come over and light with them. And she can't make it for another hour, another 2 hours. So you could wait for the grandparents to come to the house and enjoy lighting with the family. Or you can follow the Ramah's told that it's good. It's good to do it at the earlier time. So what should you do? And there he understands. He says, for sure, you should wait for the parent. That the value of Kibud Av Ve'Em is a greater value than hitting the time exactly. And even though they're both spiritually something, but the idea that you will also be able to fulfill Kibud Av Ve'Em by acknowledging the grandparents' wish to participate, that is a greater fulfillment, and that also plays a very strong role in our decision-making. And of course, as a value, this is something to ponder as well, that Chanukah is all about Hakaras HaTov. It's all about Halal V'Hodah. So a few years ago, they actually overlapped. Chanukah and Thanksgiving actually shared some space, but the mentality of both days and the message that both days are here to reinforce is crucial. And the Chassam Sofer has a tshuva where he writes that even though we understand that Chanukah is clearly post-biblical, historically it happened after the time of the Torah and was instituted by the rabbis, and the obligation to say Hallel on Chanukah, Hallel overall is probably a rabbinical obligation, Hallel on Chanukah is certainly a rabbinical obligation, one would assume, but Chassam Sofer said Hallel, the expression of praise, taps into a basic fundamental attribute that's crucial for the whole Torah, and to miss Hallel on Chanukah would be a betrayal of the message of the Torah itself, even if the format and the details were all inaugurated later by the rabbis, because the Torah itself on the most basic level requires Hakaras HaTov, requires the acknowledgement that what has happened is different, is special, and that's something that if we would fail to acknowledge that, we're missing something core and absolutely vital to what the Torah is telling us. And there is the famous question of the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef, who raised the issue that if the whole miracle of Hanukkah, of the oil specifically, is that it lasted 8 days when it should have lasted one day, so why do we have 8 days of celebration? We should only have 7 days of celebration, because only 7 days miraculous. One was what was expected to happen. And the message could be, there are many different answers, there are Sfarim that have been printed with at least 100 or more answers to this question, but on a very basic level, we could understand that when something is expected to last for one day and it lasts for eight, so we think the miraculous part is the 7 days, but really what it is a reminder that the first day was also miraculous, and that everything that we take for granted is also something which we need to find opportunities to express and to say this is something which we now recognize is so precious and so valuable. And if there's one takeaway from these torturous months of COVID, and from everything that we've gone through and we're continuing to go through, is that there's literally nothing that we can take for granted. That every aspect of life, which we have just been casual about and just thought that we could just take as given, none of it we can take for granted. Not our lives itself, not the ability to breathe, not the ability to go to shul, not the ability to go to school, not the ability to get together with family, not the ability of grandchildren to hug their grandparents. Every little detail of life that we have taken for granted, that we think is just such a basic, we've learned over these months, if we didn't know before, is precious, and we need to hope and pray for. And as we pray for the resolution very soon of this global crisis, hopefully what we will hold on to after it passes is this recognition that everything that we have and that everything our parents have given us is so valuable and so meaningful to us. And even if we forgot for a moment, now we remember to be able to reinforce that message every opportunity that we can, to remind ourselves of how crucial that is, and to further inculcate our consciousness with that appreciation is precious. So Thanksgiving gives us the opportunity, Hanukkah gives us the opportunity, and Kibbud Av Ve'Em, whether our parents are alive or parents are no longer alive, gives us chances and instances to make sure that that message stays at the forefront of how we think, of how we relate, and ultimately that determines who we are. So I wish everyone continued gratitude and continued hodah and continued reasons to feel and to experience that gratitude.